for our agenda.
It's a great covet for us that Ralph Lamb has agreed to give this cheer. It's also a rare opportunity to hear Ralph Lamb, and I just want to thank you for agreeing.
My pleasure. You all have before you, I believe, copies of the article I published a long time ago. I think it was 1970-something, in the Encyclopedia Judaica yearbook. And since then, it's been republished about 5 or 6 times. And every time it was republished, there were some changes, some additions, some omissions. So this is the original one. Before I begin, let me say this. If I say something you want to understand better, you can raise your hand. You can stop me and ask me. If you have disagreements with what I'm saying, don't raise your hand. No, I'm just being facetious over here. Save it for later on. First, let me tell you why I came to write this particular article, which has been quoted about 200 times in the various literature. It's not because I had any one problem or any one person who came to me with the problem of homosexuality. It's simply because the late Rabbi Louis Rabinowitz, Zichrono Livracha, was a very well-known rabbi. He was the chief rabbi of South Africa. His claim to fame, Derech Agav, was that when the King of England gave him an award, they took it and threw it, literally threw it back in his face, because England then, this is 1945, did not want to let Jews get into Israel, so he became very famous, infamous at that time, famous thereafter. At any rate, he was one of the editors, and he called me and said, "We have a theme, would you take it?" So it was a challenge, so I took it. And I want you to know what my cheetah was in writing about it. And I had to do a lot of thinking before I wrote. It's a good idea to do that before you speak. My problem was one that we all face. You deal with a very sensitive issue, like homosexuality, anything in the sexual area, almost any area, but primarily in a very sensitive area. You're faced with two conflicting ideas. One is the text. What does the Torah say? What does Chazal say? That's one, and that's it. But then you have a problem of people. Yeah, people, you know, many of you are going to become Rabbanim. I hope you will. I don't know if you're going to have pulpits or not. I hope you will there too, if you feel you're going for it. But you're going to have problems of, you have to paskin neshila. Now, paskin neshila does not mean getting a bar ilan responsa, pressing a button, here's the answer, it's it. That's the kind of answer a kid can do from Kusa Shulchan Aruch. If you have a real shaila, you have to know who's asking the shaila, and what are these consequences for him or her, and what are the elements of his or her life that have to be taken in consideration. You ask, someone says to you, "Are you allowed to drive on Shabbos?" Your answer is no. Is it always no? Are there any exceptions? Anyone? I'm driving someone to the hospital. I mean, in other words, you have to know who is asking, why he is asking, and what are the circumstances. You go to homosexuality. When I wrote this in 1971, whatever it was, the world was already beginning to become like what it is today, but was not quite there. So I faced the problem. I could of course look at the sources and tell and say what the sources say about homosexuality, but then I have to find out what is the world saying. And I found out that it was far more widespread than anyone had believed, and today I would say multiply that several times. It's much more widespread than, and I'll come back to that in a short while. I have to find a way to make sure that I was telling the truth of what I hesitate to use a word. what a Das Torah would be. In other words, how you would form an opinion that's not only based upon a Shulchan Aruch period, but also getting all the Makoros together, how do I apply it in this day and age so that in the end people will say that it's a great Torah, it's a holy Torah, it must come from a great God. And we want to make Kiddush Hashem and Skel Chilul Hashem. Very easy to come out with blatant remarks without thinking, without thought, without sensitivity. In the end, it turns out that Yosa Skarov Behev Seido. So I didn't want anyone who reads this to say, he's a homophobe. And homophobia is a charge. Any homosexual militant who wants to make a point says, if you don't agree with them 100%, you're a homophobe. Which is nonsense. They're trying to con the rest of us. Nor do I want to put in a position where I'm saying I'm buckling under the pressure, because neither is true. I really wanted to find out what can we do, how do we have an idea, how do we have a shita, an approach from the text. Okay. Now we live in an age when homosexuality, incidentally, what are other words of homosexuality? What are common synonyms? Anyone? Pederasty. P-E-D-E-R-A-S-T-Y, pederasty, although it's mostly for children, but it's also used for homosexuality. Also sodomy, which is technically was used only in the case of heterosexual relationships. How do you call it in Hebrew? In Gemara Lashon. B'yishalot kadarka. And therefore, by extension, it is also used, especially in the non-Jewish literature, it is used as a synonym for homosexuality. Anyway, homosexuality in both male and female, along with transvestism and transsexualism, all are part of a newly approved theory of the idiosyncratic character of sexuality. Suddenly, sexuality has blossomed like poison ivy into a dozen different forms, and all of them crowd to get our attention. What are the sources? If you want to ask me directly, what does Judaism say about homosexuality? I'll give you one answer, one word answer. Osir. If that's enough for you, God, you don't have to listen to the rest of the lecture. But if you want to delve further, then we have to look at the sources. The Torah says, Ezocha lo sishkav mishkave isha to'evahi. What does that mean? You should not sleep with a man in the way you sleep with a woman. To'evahi. The typical, general translation of tu'eva is abomination. What does abomination mean? What does tu'eva mean? That's another problem. Actually, the Torah has uses the word tu'eva in maybe a half a dozen cases. First of all, it has it twice. In Vayikra, in Achrei Bos, it says one of them is, as I said before, Sachal Rishishka Mishka Ve'isha, tu'eva hi. The other one is Ve'isha Nonesh. So there's an asara and a nodish. And it's called Tu'eva. He also used Tu'eva the first time. Anyone remember the first time in Bereshis? Where is it used? Any guess? Yosef. When Yosef can't eat with the Egyptians, because Tu'evahi, they wouldn't. It's disgusting for them to eat meat, or eat the type of meat that was served, whatever the meat may be. It's also used in general sense when Mark Torah says Losochel Kotueva. It's also used for sexual sense, but not what we call perversion. And that is that if a man gets married and gets a divorce, gets a get. Is he allowed to marry the woman later on if she had got married meanwhile? No. The Mefresh Yisrael in that Torah. It's L'sucha bala rishana sheshilcha loshu l'kach talias l'isha achrei yeshu yikamaba to'eva ilifnei yeshu. It is an abomination to divorce a woman. She sleeps, goes with someone else, marries someone else, divorces him, or she dies, you take her back again. That's banned. Why? To'eva. What do I think to'eva means? I think that to'eva really means that no reason is necessary. There are certain things that are simply prima facie disgusting. And you don't have to give reasons for it. Something, think of your own lives. What would you, don't tell me now, but think of it. What would you regard as just utterly disgusting? That's what to'eva is. Certain things are simply to'eva. Yeah, there are those who want to give reasons for it. Gemara says, Bar Kappara says, To'eba, because you're wandering. What does To'eba mean? Because in that case, if you're allowed to live with another man sexually, then you'll leave your family. You know, try to taste everything. The Torah Tumima says on Mishkevei Zachar. Instead of the real explanation, the real translation of the word, how do you pronounce it? Mishkevei. What's the next word?
Sure.
Zachur. Mishkevei Zachur. For some reason, that's the technical term, is the one that's used in the Torah too. So Torah Tumima says that To'eva means it is against nature, it's unnatural. Now, homosexuals will disagree with that violently. But the fact is, Nicotinotiri is right in this sense, that it's simply the anatomy of the male, anatomy of the female, lend one to understand that it was created in that way for opposite sex attraction, not the same sex attraction. I said the word sodomy. Why is sodomy used as a synonym for homosexuality? Obviously, Sodom. When Sodom surrounded Lot and his guests, what were they looking for? They were looking for a mass rape. What was it called again? A homosexual rape. The tribe of Binyamin was decimated. Why? Because they had an incident of the same kind, of homosexual rape, and the victim's wife, my business husband, cut her up in pieces and sent them out, whatever. It really destroyed the Sheva Ben Binyamin. In Chazal, the Dora Mabul was guilty of many things. One of them was Mishkav Zachor. Cham, who disrespected his father Noach. Chazal say there were two things, one of two Purushim. One was that he sterilized him, he was Mesares, and the other one was Mishkav Zachor, committed an unnatural act, as we used to say. Potiphar, according to Chazal, bought Yosef as an Eved. He bought him for a purpose. He wanted her to be his homosexual servant. So Kadosh Baruch Hu made a Nes and sent down Gabriel, and Gabriel was Mesares Potiphar. This is a perfectly Midah Keneged Midah. So there you have a great deal of what it's not very much. That's the time that it's used in the Torah. Modern scholars, you know, we have Osiyah, Kadesha, Kadesh, or Kadesha, Bimnei Yisrael. What is Kadesha? A prostitute. What is the word? What is it similar to? Kodesh, right? Why? Has Kadesha come to Kodesh? Because in Canaan, there were women, prostitutes, as part of the service. They were connected, they were part of the temple staff. And a woman or several women are part of the temple staff, and they were used for ritual adultery, ritual relationships. The Kodesh, therefore, is the same thing but a male. In many of the cults, in one of the Haftorahs, one of the Haftorahs, you have a description of Al Hagagos, not long ago. That the Avodah Zarah was served on the roofs, and Echad Batovah. Not Acha, but Echad Batovah. Well, it's all, again, a matter of male prostitution. In the history, in Western history, gays or homosexuals were persecuted viciously. My article, I described some of it. They were very, very harsh on homosexuals, as they were harsh on everyone who departed from their norms. But the most draconian punishment, far more severe than any legislated by law, was what the homosexuals bring upon themselves. AIDS, HVD, is the fourth leading cause of death in the world. According to statisticians, they claim that an additional 65 million lives will be lost by the year 2020. That is triple the number of those who died in the first 20 years of the epidemic, 65 million. It's also rivals the number of people killed in all the wars of the 20th century. Think of that. All the wars killed in the 20th century, three times as many, it is estimated, will die of AIDS by the year 2020. So when they make a campaign for AIDS and medicine, And don't take it lightly. These people may have sinned according to our way of looking at it, but because they sin, you don't, not for us to give a gzar din of mavis. Triple the number of all the 20th century. It's a slaughter. It's a mass slaughter. And they're bringing it upon themselves. You ever hear the name of Kinsey?
Yeah, the sexual researcher.
Yeah, any of you not hear him? Oh, it's a different generation. When I was your age, Kinsey was the thing everyone was talking about. Because Kinsey came up, basically he was the first one to try for gay liberation. But he was also, in addition to that, he was quite a very distinguished researcher, although many people poo-pooed his statistics. But he was a reliable man in many ways. He said that of the 200 million people in the United States, when he wrote, some 10 million will be homos, and 25 million will have had at least a few years of significant homosexual experience. So much so has it changed from the time I wrote that article, that in the year 2002, the New York Times, which has been a vicious proponent of gay liberation, made a decision to this day that its society pages, you never read the society pages? Hardly any. If you have wives or girlfriends, ask them. Society pages are more important somehow to women than are to men. It's understandable. But they changed policy. And homosexual gay marriages were included in the same level as opposite sex marriages. That's it. New York Times carries weight in the world of culture. That means there's been a real precipitous change in the attitude to homosexuality. So, there are even some Orthodox Jews who try to finesse the subject and get some compassion for homosexuals or Orthodox. I'm referring to the film that came out a few years ago. Trembling Before God. It was an effort, not a completely honest effort. You know, when you show people who are against it, and they're all chassidim, otherworldly, not our kind, and then you go with the people who are, it was prejudice. I don't know if it was deliberate prejudice, or if it wasn't a sort of unconscious prejudice, but it was a prejudice. It was unfortunate. Moreover, the film refused to even give the possibility that homosexuals might, with great effort, achieve success and have happy heterosexual marriages. Not even the hint of an idea that some believe in it. It assumed, therefore, that gays are irreversible. It's part of the very structure. There was some talk a few years ago that they found a gene. You remember that, the homosexual gene? Have you heard of it? It's buckus. It's a little dubiva lo ya. Why? First, they never discovered it. Later on, it turned out it wasn't so. Even if it were so, how would you answer that question? How would you answer the question? Why are you prejudiced against homos, homosexuals? I use that only as an abbreviation, not as direct. Yes?
A predisposition isn't a predetermined.
Right. I mean, after all, most men are born, if they're healthy, with a desire to impregnate as many females as possible. That's the jungle, the savage attitude. Does that mean that they have to give in to those desires? I mean, everyone has a Yetzirah. We all have desires. Most of the Yetziras, I suppose, that people have are illicit. Does it mean that, therefore, because you have the Yetzirah, that you justify it? I mean, it's crazy. The same thing with the so-called gene, the so-called predisposition. Of course they're predispositions. People have predispositions in all directions for many things. But that doesn't make it so, yes?
Not only that, but eventually, if they have this gene, with that, because they're not reproducing, how are they
going to
pass the genome to the next generation?
Yeah, but that's it can be recessive for many generations, then come. Yeah. And people are bisexual too. So we'll talk about that in a little while if I have no choice. Yeah, there's a famous man by the name of Robert Spitzer. I have no idea if he's related to the governor of the state. He's a professor of psychiatry at Columbia. He led a team. You know, in 1973, there was a big revolution that took place. In this area, and that is that until then, in the psychiatric handbook, they carried homosexuality as a disease. And that year, under the leadership of Dr. Professor Spitzer, they took that out. I must tell you, if anybody bothers to study what happened that year, you discover that there was a great deal of almost gangsterism, hoodlumism, on the part of the gay group trying to ram it through many psychiatrists who were not in favor of it. Anyway, they did remove remove the term homosexuality from as a disease from the manual. This same Spitzer, a few years later, wrote, I quote you now, "I now know that, I now believe that that is untrue. Some people can and do change. This goes against the psychiatric orthodoxy which he himself proposed. He turned and on the basis of his experience said that it is possible to happen." Now, what is the halachic background? In halacha you have, I must tell you again, very little about homosexuality. Very little. You have, Misha says, Rabbi Yehuda says, "Ala yishnu shnei yedivokim betalas achas." Two bachelors should not sleep under the same blanket. Today, of course, it would be unheard of, but once upon a time, people were poor. I remember things that you do not remember, that you had a brother, you slept in the same bed, and if you were in the generation before me, you lived in the Lower East Side, and people with screws were streaming from Eastern Europe, and you had several people in the bed together. The only way you could survive. So the Mishnah says that the Yehuda holds is an issa of tur of vakim, two bachelors to sleep under one talus, and the Chachamim matirim. Why are they matirim? So they said lo nechadu Yisrael ad kach. Jews are not to be suspected of homosexuality. Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, said that he held apparently with the Rabbi Yehuda that they're not allowed to live under one blanket. He went even further. I said there was an issa yichud with only one man in the room. According to Shulchan Aruch, you can't even be with one man in a room because of the suspicion. In our times, he writes, he lived in Eretz Yisrael, it was widespread. He must have met amongst the Arabs, where it was indeed widespread. 100 years later, Briel Sirkis, the Bach, you know, Bach is a commentary on Tur. The Bach writes very interestingly, he said to suspend the issa. There was an issa, but he suspended it. Why did he suspend it?
Because
yich. That's even worse than mochum. Why? I'm sure he would have included the blankets as well. But the reason was because it's unheard of in Polish Jewry. Polish Jewry, he never would have found out about such things. Unheard of. The Marshal similarly said it's so rare. The Marshal says it's so rare that if anyone refrains from being in a room with another man because he's choshed al arayis, he thinks he's being from, that he launches into an attack. Such a person is osim mishum yuara. That's already going too far, and that's simply, you know, yuara means arrogance, this pietistic arrogance. How about Chuvas? Yes.
I just want to ask you, where was that mishnah with Rabbi Yehuda?
Look it up in my article. It's in Kedushin, I believe. And Chuvas, very, very few. Very few. Very scant. One of the few is the Chuva by Rav Kook. A Shochet was choshed on being Mishkav Zohar, and he said, you know, if there's no proof, forget about it, and go on. Whatever the answer may be, that's the way it is. Amongst Jews in modern time, up to recently, we could say with a fair degree of certainty that in European Jewry and Israeli Jewry, it was very, very, very rare, if it existed at all. I think it probably did exist, but it was rare. Kinsey himself says that, Kinsey said the religion is of very little consequence for the incidence of homosexuality. He was wrong because Orthodox Jews were an exception. I think even today, when, you know, having been a rabbi for 25 years, and then head of yeshiva for another 25, 28 years, I have many cases, many more than the Bach and Rav Kook had all together, but certainly far less than the head of any other university would say. So it's far less than the rest of the Olam, but we still have it.
But this doesn't point to the fact that it doesn't necessarily exist. Does the community be taboo in that community? And therefore, just because there's no Shuba and you don't hear that, just because you don't come forward, something happens or they feel...
It's possible that is a factor to be considered. But you know, a Rav has all kinds of things, like a doctor come here. Yeah, all kinds of things come to the attention of a Rav. I want to have a shidduch with somebody. Choshet al Mishkav Zohar brings it to the Rav. So it's not an unusual thing. I would say that, yeah, it's a factor to a certain extent is taboo, which is, frankly, I often complain. You know, they want to take certain activities out of the closet. I say, no, the Rebbe Shimon created the closet for a reason. She's back into the closet. Why should I have to spread to the whole world? So there's very, very little of it. The question is, of course, what is Mishkav? What is the Issa of Mishkav Zohar? So the Rambam says it's an Arayis. And the other Rishonim, the Rajbah, the Dvar, agree with them. It's Arayis. However, there are some Rishonim who have seen say, no, it's not Arayis, it's an Issa. And the differences are the usual differences. In fact, there's one, the Achronim, the Dvar Melech, who says that from the Mashma, from the Rambam, not only he makes the Dir, that the Rambam would say, in a homosexual relationship, the one who acts as the male is Arayis, the one who acts as the female is the passive one is the Issa. Whether that's so or not, you can learn the Tshuva, the article in his Sefer, and you can agree with him or disagree with him. Question is, can a homosexual be cured? I referred to it before. Well, there's a long tradition of therapeutic pessimism that goes back to Freud himself. He held that it could not be changed. But interestingly, his daughter, Anna, was a psychiatrist who claims that she successfully cured homosexuals and brought them back into normal life. She treated it as a phobia, one phobia amongst many phobias. What is the phobia of homosexuality? Fear of women, mostly fear of women genitalia. There is an organization, I think it's still in existence, Jonah. Yeah. Is it still in existence? Yeah. I suppose it is. It means Jews offering new alternatives to homosexuality. And they claim to have had some... Look, if you ask me today, can it be changed? Yes. Easily? No. It's a lot of work, and a homosexual who wants to be changed has to have a great desire to be changed and willingness to undergo difficult changes in his life. But it can be done. It can be done. What's very important is for us to settle on, not to get caught on the idea that all homosexuals are equal to a lot of homosexuals. We've got to divide them into types. Here are the types that I think are necessary to categorize in order to know which way to paskin and which way to act. Actually, a famous psychiatrist, Dr. Judd Marmer, is the one who started it. There are four types, he said. One of them is genuine homosexuality. That's a person who has deep erotic feelings for people of the same sex. And he experiences very often as duress. He has no choice. He feels he has no choice. It's something that he simply has. Sometimes rising to an uncontrollable passion, which he wishes he could get rid of. This is a man who's a homosexual and is not very happy about it, but he has no choice. He is the one we really focus on. We have to use all our yediyas Torah, all our chokmah, to try to help him. The second one is a transitory homosexual behavior. This is mostly teenagers who would prefer heterosexual experiences, but because of culture or family, whatever the case may be, social pressures goes into a spin of homosexuality. It is not that he wants it, but it's just transitory. The third one will be situational homosexual exchanges. By that I mean, or he means, people who are caught in a situation where they simply have no access to women. And therefore, the only way they can release their sexual pressure is through homosexuality, such as prisoners, soldiers. So these are people who have no access, generally, especially prisoners. And therefore, their homosexuality is of a different type. From the transitory or from the following one, and that's transitory and opportunistic homosexuality. Those are young men who permit themselves to get involved in homosexuality because they're going to be paid for it, and they do it for money. I would add two other types that are important. One, even worse than the first type, than the previous types, is those who transform idiosyncrasy into ideology. They happen to be homosexuals or partly bisexual. They create it into an ideology, and they're going to fight for freedom and liberation, and they make an ideology out of what is toeva. Those, to my mind, are the worst we have halachically. The other one would be another contemptible type, what Roland May calls the new Puritanism. Does it mean new Puritanism? People who feel that in life you've got a taste of every experience. You cannot be said to have lived fully until you try everything. You know, as if you go to a banquet. At a banquet you have to taste everything on the smorgasbord. Nothing must pass by. Otherwise you're denying yourself something. Well, this is a smorgasbord of carnal pleasures. And since he never tried sleeping with a man, he's going to do it because that's contemptible in the worst way, because it's based upon a fallacy, namely that we're entitled to everything and everything under the sun. Okay. Now let's look about the concept. Now we have a problem. We have many different types of homosexuals. There are a great many of them, and there is a great deal of pressure. Our society is flooded with it, and many of our own people are caught in it. And I want to tell you that there may be in this room itself, there may be those who suffer from homosexuality who haven't told anyone. You know people, or you will meet people who are otherwise good people, observant Jews, but they're caught. The first attitude, what is the first thing you should do? Your own feelings about what's the first thing you should feel? Compassion. Pity. Because if he's an Orthodox Jew, he knows that this is Taweva. Afa Bikain, he just feels it, he can't help it. He's not doing it because he wants to do it. It's unfortunate. So I prefer to deal with this, and that was my sheet in this paper, as a disease. I'm going back to the pre-1973 change in the psychiatric manual. I would like to look at it as a disease. The various types of sodomy. The genuine homosexual who experiences that homosexuality as a duress is the one who is most likely a candidate to be pathological. Where the dysfunction is probably a part of his personality, can't help it. How would you call him an halacha? A what? He feels compelled, but he has no choice. Huh? An onus. He's an onus. He can't help it. He doesn't want to do it. He does it because he has overwhelming passions, and he does it because he must. The other kind, the opportunistic, the ideological, the transitory, are reprehensible, and we give no help whatsoever. The intermediate categories cannot be called illnesses but they do have a certain claim on our sympathy. So let's discuss the homosexuality as a disease. Now, I will not use this term disease in the formal halachic sense. You have a chagiga. What's a shota? You ever study that Gemara? What's the definition of a shota in Gemara chagiga? You're going to have shalas, incidentally, and even if you're not going to be a rabbanim, you're going to have shalas. What's the definition of an insane person? The Gemara has certain definitions. He is lunda vesa kvaras.
Someone goes out at night.
Queer term we use. Strange behavior. He sleeps in the cemetery. All kinds of crazy behavior. There are certain symptoms of the Gemara gives for a shota. I would not put that in that category. This is a disease and not necessarily a shota. So it's prohibited, I would say, because of onus. But that would not be a complete and honest answer. Why? Where is onus used for in the Gemara for sexual?
I'm trying to understand if that's the case. We should be able to say onus for all of us, for all causes in that area, because plenty of people have overwhelming desires for all sorts of different things.
Good, fine. That's what I'm saying. I'm just about to say that now.
Okay, sorry.
So, specific example. Where does the Gemara use onus for sexual matters?
Isha.
Yeah, chilasa barasa v'sofa bonus. Chilasa bonus v'sofa barasa, rather. So the question is that there is a category of onus when it comes to sexual matters, but with a woman, it's different. Because there, yisra onsa, her yetzer overcame her. And you have to find some way of exonerating whom? Historically, who has to be exonerated on the basis of onus? First of all, precisely Esther. The Gemara has an old Indian. How did Esther justify his sleeping with Ahasuerus? He was repulsive, but that wasn't her problem. It's not our problem, logically. The problem there is that she was either she was karka olam, or is dumb because she has solas beis Yisrael, Yisrael. So it's used only in that case, but it cannot be used for a man. Why? Ain kishel das. Principle of the Gemara is sexual arousal in the form of erection is always done knowingly and cannot be excused as an onus. In the case of a man who was people were ma'anis, he should love al anara. Some paskins say he was over on an issa, but he doesn't get any onus because it's an onus but not a complete onus. He shouldn't have done it, but if he did it, he was up over an avera, but he gets no din misa for it. When a male is sexually aroused in a permissible manner, let's say the case, interesting case that Gemara takes up. A man goes to have intercourse with his wife, and then someone breaks in, and they insist he come and immediately has relationships with the man. So there is, again, it's similar to with the case of a woman. But chilasa behetan, afterwards it comes be'issa. He started out, you can't blame him on the grounds of in kishi el das, because the kishi was okay. It was permissible. It was okay. All right, so then, no possible exonerated. It's not his fault. I mean, he did something that was okay, and others were ma'anasim when he was in the state of kishri. My man comes from a warped background of homosexuality. That's why I say you have to know the circumstances of a person. What time do we have here, Rabbi?
We finish at 2:40.
Okay. I have another hour at the board, yeah? Okay. Okay, in the absence of a Sanhedrin, look, we can't talk today about Chiyuv Misa, because there is no Chiyuv Misa. Oh, there's a Chiyuv Misa, there's no Misa. There are no Unshim today, and so we have to look at it another thing that stands that bothers us, and that stands in the way of exonerating the homosexual, again, I'm speaking of the genuine homosexual, is that most of the Achronim, I would include Mithas Kenach, Moshe Feinstein, Yosef Engel, in a different context say that any hanoah that is derived from an issa ba'onis increases the level of guilt. If you derive hanoah from it, no matter that you did it because you were overwhelmed, because you felt compelled to do it, nevertheless you have a prohibition there. So these sorts indicate that the difficulty of exonerating sexual transgressors because of psychopathological reasons under the technical rules of halacha is very difficult. However, as I started to say, in the absence of a Sanhedrin, since we have those system of unshim, it's impossible to implement the whole halachic penal system, including capital punishment, so such strict applications are not necessary, nor are they available to us. What we've got to do is to develop guidelines based on halacha, and not violating halacha, which will allow contemporary Jews to orient themselves to this great and terrible cultural, social problem, policy, in a manner that will articulate the major principles of halacha, and still be consistent with the broadest worldview of halacha itself. What I mean is, sometimes if you can't find a way out in halacha, you've got to look to agada. And agada should not be looked upon as so soft that it has no consequence. You can't learn. Can you learn halachas from agada? Some of the chachamim did. Most of them did not, because none of us really learned how to learn agada. We have problems learning halacha, let alone agada. You know, what did Bialik say, the difference halacha and agada? Anyone remember? Bialik, famous Bialik? Halacha is panim zoaphos, angry face. Halacha, agada is panim, what's the opposite of panim meiros? He's happy, agada is happy, halacha is dour. The Rav, and I think he got to shear once, he says just the reverse. Halacha demands certain things of you. It's within limit. A God that demands you go way beyond the limit. So in essence, a God that is much more of a machmer than is halacha. So you have to know how to read it, have to understand it, and use it properly. In our God, we have a klal that ein adam chotei elam kein nichnasa b'ura shtus. That is another way of saying that the approach to homosexuality of that kind that I think ought to be treated is through disease. Shtus is a disease. It's not an operative rule in halacha, but it is consistent with the whole attitude of Torah, and I think it's good enough for us to give us a guidance on public policy and individual counseling, pastoral kinds of compassion. That's basically what I'm trying to say in my paper. We can't do what conservatives do, just to read it out. And nowadays we no longer accept, but it's nonsense. We have to accept what the Torah says, have to accept what the halacha says, but you can do it with a certain sense of compassion. What I argued for is that our attitude towards the individual homosexual, not for the fight, not for the militant, not for the one who's dallying, not for the one who wants to taste the new Puritanism, but the genuine homosexual has to be looked upon with a great deal of compassion as a pastoral thing, which means not only a rabbi has to do it that way, all of us. We have to disagree, we have to do so with understanding, quietly, with a great deal of compassion. So none of the formal halachic scriptures exist today. They don't apply today. But we have to look for mitigating halachic elements to guide us in counseling them. To apply the halacha in this case is impossible. To ignore it is undesirable. So we've got to do the best we can in the ruach of halacha. Wherever halacha is specific, obviously that carries a day. But with a sense of compassion and rachamim, for a person who is really, in the full sense of the word, an onus. Here it depends on the types we're dealing with. There are certain types that do not warrant any special consideration, and onus does not in any way apply. But where it does apply, it remains a toeva. Unless you have to make a difference between the ma'asa avera and the onus. Sometimes a man does something, and he didn't do it, he was machal Shabbos. Is it a ma'asa avera? Yes. But he didn't know too much about it, to the strange that the ma'asa avera doesn't always result in the same onus. So homosexuality act will always be toeva. No getting away from it. How you treat the person who committed the avera, the toeva, is another sense again. Therefore, homosexuality, you're sitting in a shul. And your president comes, he says, this guy applied for membership. He wants to have an aliyah. I know he's known to be a homosexual. What are you going to do about it? No? Make believe you're 2 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Make believe you became a rav. Or an educator who people turn to for advice. What do you do about a homosexual in shul?
Well, I think like Rabbi was saying, it's going to make a difference if he's the head of the gay group of New York or whatever, if he's the ideologue or if he's the person. If he's a person that gave it to his time, I don't see how the same difference as someone who speaks Lashon Hara. And we don't kick them off of gay people yet.
If he is not one of the type of militant or any of other types that I described, other than a genuine. He's a genuine homosexual. He doesn't parade it. He doesn't want to. It's not an in-your-face kind of homosexual. He suffers from it. That's his lifestyle because that's the way he is. Person of this sort, you could treat with compassion. As long as he doesn't make a show of it. As long as he doesn't advertise, I am a homosexual. And some of them do that. Incidentally, you really can't tell by the way a person's acts. To use the word fairy. There are some people who have certain kind of effeminate manners about them. Doesn't mean in any way that he's homosexual. You can't really tell. You have a person who comes, he doesn't tell anyone, he is known privately, and you treat him with compassion, absolutely with compassion. Try to help him. And let him know, you have to let him know that what he is doing, I'm referring only to him. I don't want to talk about female homosexuality because it's a completely different order of importance. You got to tell him that, you know, we are sorry for you in any way we can help. Invite him to your home. I mean, I would not, you know, not go overboard on making him much more welcome than anybody else, but certainly make him feel welcome. He shouldn't feel that because Orthodox Jew, his fellow Orthodox Jews look down upon him because of his queerness, that therefore he doesn't have to put on film or go to daven or whatever it might be. I think is pretty important. His inner life has to be respected, and as you said, no difference with you. In many shuls, you don't have a person. If a person comes to Mechal on Shabbos, you're not going to accept him as a member, or you can find out that he's involved in other things. As long as he doesn't do it publicly, he doesn't boast about it, or he's a Baal Lashon Hara, and show me a shul you don't allow Baal Lashon Hara to come in. I mean, it doesn't exist. So it's not, of course, Lashon Hara is not as bad as. Well, I don't know. Be the Chofetz Chaim, it may be as bad as Arias. But you can't make such distinctions. You know, there's a certain cachet about homosexuality. We think that is the worst thing in the world. It's Taweva. But you know, certain kinds of Machos Asoras are also Taweva. And remarrying a wife who was there after her divorce, she remarried, now you're there. It's also Taweva. The word Taweva is disgusting, but not necessarily everything in the same order of disgust. Give you another example. If a man murders in a cold, calculating way for profit, does he deserve our compassion? Absolutely not. On the contrary, you do it to him what the Iraqis did to Hassan. Hassan, what's his name?
Saddam.
But if psychotic murders, in a psychotic fit, do you treat him the same way? No, you lock him up until he gets over his, you know, until he gets cured, if he ever can get cured. You don't lock him up, you don't hurt him, but the point is that you don't destroy him. You don't kill him for it. And the act, even if you're going to treat him therapeutically, it's a ma'aseh aveira no matter what you do. Treat him as a patient, in other words. Another example that I use, suicide. Now clearly from the Gemara, suicide, but Mabed Asim Ladas is a case of Ma'rel Issa, but I'm not passing, there's no Hesped, there's no Shiva, there's no Kriya, everything goes. And the Krogim are not allowed to sit Shiva for him. If you were rabbis, I would ask, what's your experience? And a rabbi always has such experiences, unfortunately. We everyone, without exception, treats it as an onus. Unless a person, you know, has a philosophy, and there were such people, a famous poet, this Piaf, what is his name, had that also, she believed that people ought to commit suicide at a certain point. That's ideology. There you throw the book at a person of this, I mean, instead of you throw the book, she's dead. But the other things apply. No Krovim, no Shiva, no Espedim, so on and so forth. And the same thing I think would apply. There's the whole attitude, I believe, starts with Chassan Sofer, a more benevolent attitude to the suicide. But even there are those Achronim who say the only way you can pass the Shaila, according to the Gemara, for a suicide, if you gave him Hasra before the event, and he said, Afa became. You see a man about to jump through the window, you see him never allowed to do that. I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway. That's a different story. But it doesn't come up in the normal practice very often. So we don't say that every suicide is okay, but we say, look, the ma'aseh aveira is there, but we don't use any punishment techniques under such conditions. Because why? Because it is an onus. The number of homos known is enormous. The estimate that I read, that the actual number estimates from the number of known homosexuals is an enormous number, about 6 million or so. As we said before, to single out homosexuals as special punishment when the society we live in indulges itself in any kind of davar miyus and davar ra is not right. Remember, the Megillah Sota was bottled. Why is the Megillah Sota bottled? Why? What does the Gemara say? According to the Torah, if you have an adulteress, you have the Mayim Amarim. You know what I'm talking about? Of course you do. So why are you so silent? You have a sota, it's just you give a Mayim Amarim, what happens? And she gave a klolos and so on. The Gemara says, we don't do it anymore. Why does the Rebbe say we don't do it anymore? Mishadabu Hamanafim. There's so many of them. It's the same reason Chazal used for suspending by a halachic trick of suspending capital punishment. Well, how did the Gemara say that 4 years, 7 years before the Korban Beis HaMikdash, they said they had to move out of the Chanuyos, or the place where they had to sit, in order to make judgment outside of the Beis HaMikdash, in order they should not be able to give the death punishment? Why? Because there are too many Roskin. You can't kill the quarter of the population. So you see that Chazal were very cognizant of the surrounding culture and had to make a decision based upon Makoshas and based upon reason, instead of just by because it's written that way, you have only one interpretation. I think that today the Rabbi Hamanafin is clearly applicable to homosexuals, in opposition to what was written by the Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein, writing in 1971 in the Igeres Moshe, says Hagnai af lebnei odam shekol olam af ha'rasha'im vazen lebalei aveda demishkav zocha. The whole world, even the Shoim, look with contempt upon homosexuals. Not anymore. Not today in America. And probably in most of the world. What is he giving? He has someone writing to me, he wants to know he's a homosexual, and unfortunately he wants to know that he, what does he do? So the Moshe told him in a very nice way, of course, that the halacha is the halacha, but he should try hard, and he should learn Torah. Learn more Torah. Is that a real answer? I don't think that is. And the Gemara says, I don't know if you remember this Gemara, in Pogabach Manuvel Zeh, if you read this Manuvel, this disgusting character, who is it referring to? The Yetzirah, Mashcheil the Beis HaMedrash. Bring him into the Beis HaMedrash and use your taiva, your lust, sublimate it, as Freud would say. Sublimate it and use it productively. Now, that's a very true thing. Until Freud discovered sublimation, we knew about it much earlier. If you have certain libidinal impulses, you can't control them, learn, involve yourself in something other than yourself, and spend your emotional energy and sexual energy is part of it, in doing something constructive instead of something destructive. Some of the provide with the halacha l'maaseh. I would say, no matter what the sexual orientation, you have to remind the homosexual that licit legal sexuality is only for married people of the opposite sex. We must recommend and encourage therapy. We must tell them that those who feel they can't succeed in opposite relations, in heterosexual relationships, they have to choose celibacy, to live celibate. Now, there are many men who are heterosexuals who also live celibate lives, sometimes out of choice and sometimes not out of choice. I think a man who chooses homosexual, who chooses celibacy, is doing something very noble and really deserves a great deal of credit for it. It's very noble. You know, and also I point out another thing that I was not aware when I wrote this paper. There's a difference between homosexual orientation and action. Big difference. There are people who are, and in fact, someone showed me this past week a blog from a, I don't know who the fellow is, whatever his name is, and I've never heard of him before. Apparently he's a conservative fellow who believes in the Torah, believes in the halacha. And he is a homosexual. But he says he believes absolutely that Issa is there, Taweva, and he would never do it. But he just likes the company of men, and he likes all the surrounding things. Even if in heterosexuality, you know, there's a Maisa, but sex isn't everything. There's also, if you read the literature, there's a difference between sex and sexuality. Sex is the act. Sexuality is all that goes around about it, politeness, sweetness, whatever it may be. The same thing is true with men who are homosexuals. They can have orientation. Orientation is not the same as an action. The Torah did not asa orientation. It asa the act. Mishkabe Isha, that has to be the same way that one lives with a woman. So it's something that has to be taken into consideration. You have to ask the homosexual, are you happy the way you are? If he says yes, you have no recourse but to let him, don't have anything to do with him. That means you have to determine the category and act appropriately. As I said before, when I was a Rav, even now, if I knew there was a homosexual that does not bother other people, a case I've had, unfortunately, it came to my attention because they bothered other people, I would accept them. If I give an aliyah in my shul to Mechalel Shabbos and to Ochrei Tarfas and to Medaber Lashon Hara, I would have to include him in the circle of acceptables. If I don't, and he's no different from anyone else in Mechalel Shabbos.
Would you be more cautious as a homosexual on the prize for a job as a Milan Daritaki?
I wouldn't be as cautious as I would be if I was looking for a teacher for a girl, for a man, for a girl's class. I think it's a perfect analogy. If I have a man who I don't think could control himself, he's facing a bunch of young women, I would do the same thing for a man in front of men. Not other than that. Yes?
The type 1 homosexual decides that if he really can't fight it, and decides that he wants to like create a family. So do we allow that? He fights dirty by marrying a woman.
He what? Oh, he's bisexual, basically.
Yeah, I
guess. Has no compassion, because if he's bisexual, it means he can live with a woman. He doesn't like to. Many men don't like to live with that woman. But if he feels he gets greater pleasure to have homosexual, too bad. You have a way of releasing your pressure. You have a way of living a normal life. That's what you got to do.
But he's not acting on it, but he's married to a woman anyway, so really.
If he's what?
He's not acting upon it, but his orientation.
Yeah, it's okay. If she is satisfied with that, fine. It's a matter of purely a personal taste.
How do you treat
them
with a gay family member?
The same way you would treat him if you found out that he was arrested for loitering or for paisa, anything else. I would not say that he is the person that should be the Rashk Bahag. He's not going to be, you're not going to say that your children live like him, he's your model. But I wouldn't make up a family because of it. How about this year?
No, in terms of having your kids know how he lives.
If a child is old enough to be called, not old enough to be called anything but a kid, don't tell him. If he grows up and is understanding, that's different. Yeah. If he's the type of person, was chepetzach, he hangs around kids and is looking for an opportunity, I would simply lock the door on him.
No, what if it's someone that's in a...
In a monogamous heterosexual
relationship, yeah. Moves away because he knows he can't live in his community, and is a good person, overall. But when your children are older, are you supposed to try to discourage relationship?
What the halacha is? You treat him if he's a person who is a genuine homosexual. Who would change if he could change, but can't, then you treat him with respect and courtesy.
What if you feel someone that tried to change but kind of gave up?
Well, that's an onus. That's what we're talking about. A man who tried to change but couldn't. Well, that's the first category. It's a genuine homosexual.
Because the way I answer the onus is someone who's actively trying to change. This is someone who gave up trying to change.
Well, that means at least he tried. Yeah. I would not blame him for failing. I would credit him for trying. They failed. How many of us fail in our ambitions, aspirations, our noblest aspirations? Vishagamu basar. Yeah.
He didn't
talk yet.
I know that there are a number of instances where, let's say, high school boys will be on some Shabbat home together, things like that, and as a result, they'll be put up in a hotel and be placed in the same beds. To what extent do we take the Mishnah and I guess a little bit to, or at least the Shulchan Aruch, as compared to what the Bach says, if the Bach says that the reason that he rejected the Shulchan Aruch was because it's something that's unheard of today, if it's not something that's unheard of today, what should be our expectations?
I would try to go to the middle ground. I wouldn't say you're not allowed to be in the same room. That's, it's just going just too far. But I would certainly try to discourage going to the same bed. Unless there are 5 beds and 10 people, then you're not going to carry on in front of others. But if it's going to be yichud and one blanket, I would say that the Bach's Heter does not apply to us. I would be machmed.
So I believe Rabbi said that the act is usher, but if you talk about this conservative guy that wouldn't do the act but hangs around with men, and so it seems to be that you shouldn't even. If someone has like a very strong tagline for cheeseburgers, they're not allowed to hang out in the McDonald's restaurant and talk with people and smell them and look at them, but not actually eat it.
That's not the same thing. if you parse the sentence like a grammarian, it's the same thing. But look, hanging around at McDonald's is not the same thing as hanging around homosexuals.
One of the things, like when Rambam talks about the definition of Teshuvah Gemara, that you have to be in that same situation and then choose not to do it. But then we learn that it's also to put yourself back in that same situation.
Yeah, that's because not everyone can stand it. You know, not everyone is ready for Teshuvah Gemara.
So if you sin with
a woman and you want to go to tshuva, take my advice and don't use the Rambam as a guide.
So what
the Rambam means is the tshuva has to be so effective that even if you had the same person, the same woman in the same room at the same time, you wouldn't do it. But don't have to put yourself in that situation.
So I'm saying, so how could it be allowed for this guy to? Because I thought I heard you say that the act is usher, but the homosexuality itself is not
us, sir? No, you can't help it. I mean, yeah, if I likes to be with male company, he likes to play ball, he's a sportsman, he likes to hang around with men, he doesn't like women. I mean, many people are there who don't like women, who are not necessarily homosexuals. Many homosexuals too don't like women. So what? I mean, as long as he doesn't do anything. The Torah asar ha-maisa. They're not asar. Yeah, it's true, the Chazal say that in huri aveira kosher me'aveira. But, you know, if you take that very seriously, literally, seriously, of course you take it. If you take it seriously, a lot of awareness are going to happen. The Gemara in Kedusha says, Misha Roesh Yisra Mizgaber Olo, the Gemara says, what should he do? Leilcha Mokram Shei Makir Nasr Hashem V'yalbish Orem V'yaseh Bashili V'chafes. I would not use that for young Talmidim as suggested how to deal with the Yitzhara. First of all, if you wear black, was a sign that you're an oismarf. Excuse me, everyone. But it's true. That way, the Gotaz of the Gemara, wearing black meant you're going to melt into a bad crowd. So, yeah, what did Gemara say? Yelech lebokom she'emakir nosam, yo elbish chorim, v'yasem ashili bochom. Koska had a different interpretation, but it's a Koska vort. He said the Gemara is not talking about doing it in the day of Chas v'Shalom. Gemara is saying, if you want to do a good thing, you want to do a mitzvah, want to change your life for the better, but you're embarrassed, people look who's from now. The answer is, go to a place where no one recognizes you, but Hashem Masha leave what your heart really wants to do. But that's a pshetel, it's not a shot. But it means, a big question, what do you do about, you know, they have a question, may I have a. That means, sometimes to what Chazal meant, I think, has a great deal of merit if you don't use an immediate practice. What I meant, I think, was you make a masa, you do it and you're done with it. Yehuri Aveira, go on and on and on. The Yitzhara is there and it schleps along. It doesn't let you rest. What said that Yitzhara is Doma Lezvum, a fly. Why a fly? So Rasul Salanta says, a fly, you chase it away. What does it do? It comes right back again. The Yitzhara, you think you beat him? He's around the corner. He's there with you again. So the Yitzhara, the Yehuri Aveira, are Koshim Aveira in that sense. It never lets go. The Aveira itself, if you've done it, you've done it, you have to do the truth and go on. But
how would the discussion you've had be any difference with regards to homosexuality with women?
Well, the homosexuality with women is of a different order because Gemara says it's first it's a lav, it's not a rayas, no einish, and the Rambam used a very interesting term, nashim hamisalsal zubizu. I never heard of the term before. It means carry on, I suppose. I don't know that Rambam really meant by it. I never heard the term other than that Rambam. But he says it's a lav. The only question is, if a woman of that sort, lesbians, are they also the kahuna? That's the shaila. And I would doubt that they are, but I can't pass on that shaila unless it really comes to me. I have to look it up. But I know that the Rambam says it mentions the Issa. And I think he holds it as also a good, apostle of good. I'm not sure. Anyone else?
How is it that homosexuality propagates uh, How is it that it promotes?
Because it mostly had it, the virus. The virus resides someplace in the rectum, the anus, and therefore the one to contact it is generally a male. And if he has more relations with other males, that keeps on going. And if he has relations with a woman, then the woman get it too. But they don't transmit it except to another male. So it's a virus which favors men, prefers men. But look, it's a worldwide plague. I mean, on the statistics, let's say they're exaggerated by a figure of 10. So it's not going to be 65 million people going to be. It's only going to be 50 million people killed. It's William Dickens. It's incredible. It's slaughtering out a whole part of civilization.
In today's society that homosexuality is so accepted, do you think it would be prudent for Rove to get up publicly and speak about homosexuality as a disease? Or are there other ways that he could couch this argument than be?
Well, I think the way I gave it to you, I think should be inoffensive to a true homosexual. And I would not be afraid of saying it. Someone told me an interesting thing, who it was. He says, I think it was Rabbi Willard. He met a man who moved to Riverdale. He had lived in New England. He said, "Do you know Rabbi Lamb?" He said, "Why?" "Because I was in his shul when he was a young rabbi in Springfield, Massachusetts. And he was speaking from the pulpit, and he said, 'You're not allowed to ride on Shabbos. If you have to come to shul, if you want to come to shul, become a guest of someone who lives nearby, but don't ride on Shabbos.'" I thought to myself, this guy is jeopardizing, he says about me, this guy is jeopardizing his career. People are going to turn against him. I admired him for it. I never forgot it, he said. So, you know, sometimes the truth hurts and gets you into trouble. I've seen that time and again. I know Rabbanim, younger Rabbanim especially, who still have a Liska de Araisa and the courage of their convictions. After a while, we lose a lot of those courage and a lot of those convictions. But you still have that courage. If you do it like a mensch, I think I overdid it. I could have couched it differently. Or maybe I did, but he read it that way. I normally don't come out so blatantly hurting people. But anyway, Farrell Lubavitcher today, I wouldn't mention it at all, but invite them to come, because that's what they generally do. But it all depends how you say it. But that can and then, you know, you have to know how to speak English. You have to say the same thing, but in the least hurtful manner. But there comes a point where you can't help yourself. You just can't help yourself. I know rabbis in my own family who lost positions because they refused to bend. My brother, early in his career, was a rabbi in Puerto Rico, of all places. And a nice place. It's a nice place. I'm not going to share my prejudices with you. Went to the shul. And the president had married, president of the Orthodox Shul has intermarried. The little boy had no gear, was about to become bar mitzvah. He said to my brother, "Rabbi, I want to make bar mitzvah for my son." He said, "Isn't your wife non-Jewish?" He said, "Yes." "Was any conversion, she, the boy?" "No, I can't do it. I can't do it." He had to leave a position. His wife was pregnant. He had to come and live in his mother-in-law's home, which itself is a noinish, and any mother-in-law. Really, for 5-6 months, I had to help support him. We all chipped in. To my mind, he's a hero. He gave up a certain income because he had a principle. Halacha is halacha. And there's no way of getting around it. If there's a way of getting around it, I certainly would have told him, because his parnasa was at stake, his family was at stake. But you know, there comes a time where you're tried. Yes or no, that's all. There comes a time when you got to stand up for what you believe in. After all the attempts at modifying it, explaining it, there comes a point when you had no choice. And then you got to say yes or no. You got to be a rov or not a rov, a mensch or not a mensch. I hope you don't have such an assurance, but they come in everyone's life. Okay, any more non sequitur questions?
Non sequitur, but what is the rov's
or any
thoughts on the JTS decision?
On the what?
JTS.
Say what?
JTS, the conservative seminary.
They're so confused. No, I feel a lot of compassion for them. I read the paper of one of the people, a major Mako in this. Anyway, the major Mekel in this thing. He wrote a paper 20 years or 15 years ago. I mean, I read it and I started to laugh. I chuckled. Well written, very well written, very smart. But Ein L'dayan El Hashemah Ein Avros. That becomes an excuse for saying anything you want. Since it is now possible and since homosexuality is so prevalent, therefore the dayan has to include that too. Dayan Ein L'dayan Mash Ein Avros is an exclusive thing. Nothing else counts but the case in front of you. For him, it's expansive. I mean, there's such a misuse of halakhic terminology. I don't know if it's deliberate. I think it's out of ignorance, probably. But you know, because of the computer, it's now possible for the biggest number of artists to sign a katan lechokum. It can be done, you know. Get the computer, get on the internet, and see what happens. You don't understand it, but it's okay. You can almost understand it. You spout it, so the guy who reads it doesn't know anything at all. He thinks you're a big talmid chacham. I was disappointed. Right. On the other hand, those who came out against it thought with a great deal more of obvious intelligence and knowledge, although I don't agree with them, many of the conclusions they came to, but the major conclusion was, cut it out, you don't do it. Roth, I think his name was. I don't know the man personally. But he came out with a statement that was, this is the text that he was accused by his opponent, what I'm referring to, that the law doesn't go only by text. So he quoted some judge who said that law doesn't go only by text. Shekola, great Kiddush. I mean, we have a Torah Shabbat there. He didn't know about that. I was not impressed. Sometimes you read someone whom you disagree with, but he impresses you. You know, there's chokma there, there's intelligence, but a wrong conclusion. I'm not impressed. Take away the computer, he didn't know what he's talking about. Okay, gentlemen, anything else? I wish you all a very good Shabbos. Wish you a lot of good luck, and hope that if you do go into the Rabbanis or to any of the Avodas HaKodesh, that your Shabbos should not be agonizing, and you should deal with all of them with great intelligence and sensitivity. Oh, good. Yeah.